Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for listening to The Art of Image. I'm Dan Phillips. This program is focused on personal image development. These shows will discuss topics ranging from custom tailoring to business attire to communication and everything in between. Stay tuned. This is The Art of Image.
Thanks for joining us here on The Art of Image with Parker Geiger and myself, Dan Phillips. Today is a really exciting show. It's something I've wanted to do. It's a show on human resources, and it's a show that I've wanted to do for a while now, and finally we have someone who knows a lot about it. And so we're going to interview Virginia H. Means on the topic of human resources management and its effects on business image today. So stay tuned for that. Parker, are you there?
I am here. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing fine, doing real good. And today's been, it's been a really exciting week this week. Lots of things are happening. I feel brand new. I feel like, wow, I haven't been on the show in such a while here. Everything seems new and different again, all over again.
How have things been with you? It's been great. We moved into our new office space this weekend in Buckhead, and we're excited about that, and been really busy blogging, and ironically, my first blog of the week was about perception and, things of that nature, and I just got a follower on Twitter from Germany this morning, and he is following us now, and he sent us a very interesting blog that he wrote today, which kind of tied in, and I thought it was very interesting, and I thought it was even more interesting because we have Virginia that's coming on board from HR, but it was really talking about the perception of your desk and how it affects the perceptions of the form about your professionalism in the office space. And 18%.
You mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So is your desk floppy or neat?
Desk.
Desk.
Okay, desk.
So if your desk is floppy, what does that mean about you?
Okay. Yeah, so I think we've all been there a few times.
Absolutely. But a lot of times people, their office looks very messy. They're very organized, but to the outside of the perception is that they're not organized. And they polled a group of HR managers, and 18% said absolutely affects their perception of their professionalism. So that sounds very interesting.
I worked with a few people, namely me, looking here. My desk, I think I need to improve on that. The thing is I know where everything is. But like you were saying, the perception is that, maybe you're just, not organized, as you said. But for me, I have this, very a different way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel comfortable in the space that I'm in. I know where things are, but if I had anybody else working here with me, it's like, well, where do you have some basic things like a pencil?
Right. Well, I think the effect is that, when you're working in a small space by yourself or your own personal space, it has a whole different impact. But I think when you're working with a company, that also can affect, you have visiting clients that come into an office. I think that can affect, the perception of the organization. So it was just an interesting thing. I thought it was more interesting that somebody in Germany now is following us.
It's just amazing.
Social media is amazing. Amazing. Well, how's it going on your side?
Oh, it's going great. I've been, listening to the news and with everything that's going on, I just wanted to, before we go deeper into the show, I just wanted to have just a few seconds here in silence with regards to the people of Japan because everything they've been going through and just the mess that, you know, things are in there. So just a few seconds here. I just want to have a brief moment in silence.
Okay.
Okay, well, I'd like to start off the show, Parker. As you know, I usually have these articles, and, you know, I read an article, and this one is about HR. And the article is from HR Solutions E-News. The title of it is Branding Your HR Department. It was written by Amelia Forzak. She's the Associate Marketing Project Manager. And the article goes like this. It says, brand image is a topic where most companies defer to their marketing department for guidance. The marketing department understands the message your company is trying to send and how to reach the target market. This is all well and good, but it is only part of the big picture. A major component of branding that is commonly overlooked is internal branding from the human resources department. The HR department is the living model of company values and culture. What HR staff says and does, as well as the policies they create and enforce, sends a powerful branding message to job candidates and employees. Strong HR branding can create a positive reputation for an organization as an employer, which will lead to attracting and retaining top talent. It is essential for organizations to examine their HR department to see if the message they are sending aligns with the company's mission and values and reflects employees as being being an important asset. Managing HR branding is also extremely important when it comes to word-of-mouth advertising. What people say about a company leaves a lasting impression that is often much stronger than formal marketing or advertising campaigns. In an age where people share minute details of their lives with total strangers online, companies should pay even closer attention to managing their reputation through personal interactions with employees, potential employees, and even prospective clients and current customers. I thought that was a really interesting thing, and it sounds like, you know, with a lot of the information I've been reading, the cutting edge right now with respect to companies and retaining and attaining or acquiring top talent is really in marketing the company's culture and what they're all about and their image.
Absolutely, and I can't wait to hear Virginia's feedback on that because I think it's all about HR. What I've noticed with my clients, HR is getting more heavily involved in all aspects of the organization because I think the HR is shifting a lot in how they work within an organization. For example, when I work with companies, it's just I would work with the director of training. HR wasn't involved. When we went to ESPN, HR controlled all of that. They managed everything. And part of that is because they want to make sure that everything they put out there is correct. I mean, it's a very big responsibility. And I think HR, I think it's a great thing because a lot of companies are merging their divisions. HR is teaming up with the training department or the marketing department. I don't know if that's a newer trend. I'm just seeing that a lot with my clients. Of what they're doing now, so that would be something interesting to talk about that with Virginia. And I think, you know, you go back to that word of mouth, you know, that goes back to our VIP model, visibility, image, and performance. You know, visibility is everything. And you get one person talking bad about you, it does more harm than 10 people talking good about you because it just tends to spread.
Exactly.
So it's a very interesting article. So we have to get Virginia's feedback on that.
Sure, absolutely. And you know what, Parker? I got an email for this week here, and let me go ahead and just read that email. This is written by Andy. I guess this is someone who had listened to a lot of the shows we were doing on clothing and, you know, personal image and branding and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And this is someone who just graduated from college, and they're involved in the business world now and getting their feet wet in that. But the question is, just started my first job after college, and I'm in the business world. Can you please describe casual business attire for men? And wanted to get your ideas about that part.
It really depends on every company has their own definition of what that means. So in our world, you know, business casual doesn't include jeans. Now, it doesn't mean they don't have a dress down day for that. But for the most part, what he needs to do is look at the corporate culture where he's working and seeing what the, you know, not so written policy is, but what the policy of what's going on in the environment. But typically, business casual could be a suit without a tie with an appropriate shirt, preferably not a white because it looks like you just took your tie off. And then also business casual could be a nice blazer or a sport coat with a pair of khaki slacks, not khaki color slacks. Not khaki. Khaki is, you know, khaki is really a color, but it's become known in the industry like a cotton pant. But you're better off in a microfiber or a dressier fabric in a khaki color. You know, and you also, if you're just going to do no jacket, you want to make sure you use no short sleeves, always long sleeves. Now, there are some, I was at a client's location yesterday, they wear golf shirts. A lot of the executive men wear golf shirts. But if that's the case, you know, as a new employee, I would not be doing that. I would go dressier. But a lot of the senior team wears golf shirts, but they wear high-end cotton, like a Sea Island cotton, very shiny,
yeah,
and dressy fabric, not a real thick, bulky one. So I always, it's better for him to dress it up one notch than it is to dress it down, for sure.
Okay, so always err on looking a little bit, I guess, yeah, as you said, a little dressier than maybe you might not think. But,
absolutely.
Now, did you say short sleeves or long sleeves?
Long sleeves. There
long
is no
sleeves.
Such
okay.
thing as a short, you know, sometimes business casual can be a button-up short sleeve shirt, but I don't recommend short sleeves in business for men. Women's
okay.
different, but for men
it's
too
casual. And that's because it looks a little too casual? Or?
Yes, it looks too casual.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
But
well,
I would recommend him looking around at the. I would recommend him looking around the culture and seeing how other people dress, and kind of follow that lead. Because sometimes there's that unwritten dress code policy that's not really in writing, but it's kind of highly suggested.
So really, he should probably get his hands on the company manual and dress code just to be sure, make sure he's doing the right thing.
Absolutely. It doesn't hurt, and it certainly doesn't hurt him to ask his manager, you know, or his superior,
yeah,
you know, what is this, define this for me. It certainly doesn't hurt to do that either.
Right. Right. So let's introduce and let's get the show started with
Great.
Virginia H. Means. Virginia, are you there?
I am here, Daniel. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Terrific.
Now, Virginia Means is the managing director of VCG Human Resource Consultants. She's a board advisor for the Society of Human Resource Management, that's the SHRM, has received the National Pinnacle Award for Innovation and was nominated for the Wall Street Journal's Women to Watch. She has helped companies
wow.
achieve placement on Fortune's 100 Best Companies to Work For, Top 100 Training Organizations, and Working Women's Top 100, as well as she received the Catalyst Award for the Advancement and Development of Women. Virginia attended the Wharton HR Business School. She earned her undergraduate degree from the University of Georgia and is a certified senior professional in human resources. Welcome to the show, Virginia H. Means.
Thank you so very much, Daniel. I appreciate the invitation to join you all. What a great program.
Absolutely. Well, Virginia, I wanted to know, this is the first question I've had, and it's something I've really been thinking about to a great degree over the years, and it's something that businesses that I've been involved with have asked me. And I know this is something that a lot of organizations that are beginning and really want to do the right thing have asked themselves. And the question is, what is human resources, and why is it important to the image of an organization as a whole and to individuals within the organization as well?
Okay. We can definitely talk about that. You know, it's interesting, Daniel, you were mentioning the article a little bit earlier. I was listening, and really your reputation as an employer, if it's positive, then it's easier to recruit people. It's the whole employment branding scenario there. And if you think about employment branding and how powerful that can be for companies, you have to think also about what makes up a company, what makes up the company image, and it's really the individual people. And so to answer your first question in terms of, you know, the branding or imaging part of it, the reason it's important is not just for oneself, but it's also an organizational issue. If you don't have individuals who have great reputations, then overall your organization won't have a great reputation. So what is human resources and why is it important? Traditionally, HR has been sort of an administrative, policing, enforcer, and sort of back office scenario. But for optimal performance, HR has to concentrate on enhancing revenue through people-related business strategies. And that is critical for the success of companies in the future.
Interesting.
And so what does that mean exactly? Could you go into that a little in greater detail for us?
Sure, I'd be glad to. It really means that talent management has truly become a make-or-break core competency, even in this tough economy.
Wow. Now, I guess this is the because I have seen a few articles written recently. Every now and then, you know, it's like this seems to be coming up. It's a trend that seems to be continuing. It's really seems to be reaching a climax here, and that is, you know, how do we retain qualified, great employees? You know, because I've had a lot of experience in the internet marketing field and working with people and getting them or helping them acquire jobs in that field. And the mindset with a lot of those folks is, you know, if they find something better or more interesting to them, or the atmosphere or the culture of that organization is a little more to their suiting, then they're going to go for that, and they may leave the company they're currently at.
No
question. Is this something that you have seen personally as an HR professional?
Yes. Is particularly in the service industry, you know, people are your connection point with your customers. And so, you know, people vote with their feet, and if you've got a top performer who walks out the front door, they could take those clients elsewhere. You may not have the sense of loyalty from clients that you once had if your customer service becomes compromised. So no question, I've definitely seen that. And really one of the pieces that's important in terms of HR, you were talking about, you know, HR professionals. HRs have got to sort of have a mind shift from managing just the monetary levers, which are, by the way, quite important, you know, compensation and benefits and expenses related to people, to really shifting that mind to increase the asset value of human capital. So if you think about intangibles such as employee engagement, you know, employee engagement links directly to customer satisfaction and the bottom line. So the higher the sort of employee engagement scores you see in an organization, the better the performance of the organization.
So what you're saying then is employee engagement is that marker then. It's what's telling that organization how well they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of on an internal level, yes, but it has implications externally as well with your customer base.
Virginia, I had a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
You made
sure.
A comment a while ago that kind of reminded me of a conversation I had with one of my clients. And, you know, you talk about human resources and human capital and things of that nature. Do those terms tend to take away from the personal feel good about a person? So you're looking at an individual as being, you know, a human resource, like, or human capital, you know. Does that take away the humanness of the person, the titles? Has that been discussion around HR specialists at all?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, Parker. Human resources used to be called personnel. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I do.
And then it sort of transitioned more to human resource. So this is a resource of the company. And then organizations began to see people as capital. You make capital investments, and you make people investments. And so while the term, I see exactly what you're saying, the term human capital, for example, sounds much more, much less personal, I guess, than others, it's really intended for the business leaders to see the people as a part of their capital that can be leveraged for the company. So, so that's how that sort of came about. And that's Well, that's also why you start to see things like talent management, talent acquisition, for example, instead of recruiting, talent management instead of maybe training. It's really the learning and development programs used to be called training, and now they're, you know, people are moving more toward the talent management terminology. Recruiting, again, used to be, you know, that's how you went out and found your people. And still, it's basically the same process, but it's seen as a little bit different in terms of talent acquisition. So they're starting to use, you know, acquisition is more of a business term. And, you know, that sort of pendulum is swinging to see people as just a critical element of business that can be leveraged for the benefit of business.
Right. I like that a lot because it does bring the personal feel back into it, you know, as well. And in terms of what I talked to Dan earlier in the beginning of the show, you know, I'm starting to see a real trend where HR is getting heavily involved with training, marketing. That was never the case. I mean, I never worked with HR until about 4 years ago, typically, unless HR, you know, would call us directly for a certain, you know, project and engage us. But for the most part, you know, we work with them. When I went to ESPN, HR was a huge partner in that. Is this kind of a trend that's going on with HR departments?
Absolutely. They're seen as individuals who have a good finger on the pulse of the organization. We talked a little bit about sort of employee engagement and how that can directly link to the success of a company. And the C-suite, the people who are in the C-suite, the executives of the organization, want to keep their finger on that pulse. They want to understand perceptions both internally and externally.
Wow, that's very interesting. Very interesting. So now I can start calling on HR professionals instead of directors of training and marketing.
I think so, yes, absolutely. Watch out, here comes Parker.
Here comes. Oh, that's interesting. Well, I did know that.
Now, Virginia,
you
mentioned
perception. Go ahead, Daniel, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Virginia, you mentioned employee engagement as being directly linked to customer satisfaction and the bottom line. What about disengaged employees? I mean, what kind of effects do they have in the organization? What's their side of the story?
Well, you know what, Daniel, the opposite is true as well, right? So higher engaged employees tend to perform better within the organization, which means the organization performs better. Well, so the opposite, disengaged employees, can erode an organization's bottom line and really break the spirits of their colleagues in the process. In fact, are you familiar with the Gallup polls?
Oh, absolutely,
So Gallup estimates the cost to be more than $300 billion for disengaged employees. That would be with a B, $300 billion. $300 billion. And according to the conference board, highly engaged employees achieve an average of 99% of their sales goals. And, you know, sales is where it's at. That's where your top line is, where your revenue comes in. Disengaged sales reps, the ones who don't get, you know, booted out the door, because they don't perform at all. They, on average, have around 91% of their sales goals met. So if you just take an average company that has about $100 million in sales, if you take those percentages, you're looking at a company who misses out on about $8 million per year if the employees are not engaged. And then you take that year over year, and you could really start to see a huge difference in both the revenue and profitabilities of an organization. So this is part of the reason the C-suite is so incredibly interested in understanding employee engagement at their organizations.
Now you mentioned C-suite. Could you tell me what that is?
Sure. That's a good question. So you hear chief executive officer, you hear chief operating officer, chief marketing officer, CCC. The C-suite. These are the executives, top executives in an organization.
Okay.
And, of course, there are others, the chief financial officer, the chief technology officer, chief information officer. There are many chiefs, and when you hear C-suite, that they're referring really to the decision makers in an organization.
I just got an email here, Virginia, that relates to just what we're talking about. Bring it up. Okay, here it is. I work in HR, and the company I work for is interested in increasing employee engagement. What are some things we can begin to do to achieve this goal?
Well, it's a great question and a hot topic right now. So, really, the first part of that question was, what are some things we can do to increase employee engagement? Well, what I would say is, in order to increase it, you've got to know where you are today. So the first thing I would say is, take that pulse that we were talking about. You can use SurveyMonkey. You don't have to spend a lot of money on employee engagement surveys, but understand what metrics are important to your company. Then you ask your employees those particular questions and gain insight from them in terms of where the gaps might be for employee engagement. Then you can build an action plan, which was really, a big part of her question or his question, an action plan to address those particular issues. Then you can go back and measure whether or not you've been successful. Using metrics in HR is absolutely critical in order to continue to gain credibility in the marketplace and in industries.
So this is really something that needs to be tailored to that organization. It's not a cutout, cookie-cutter sort of a thing where this is what you have to do, step one, step two. Really, you need to tailor it to your organization and what's going on there.
That's exactly right. A company that has just been acquired, for example, might have a totally different kind of employee engagement survey than a company that has been around for, several decades and hasn't really had a tremendous amount of change in their environment.
Great question. Thank you so much, Alexis, for sending that question. Please send more. This is great. Virginia, how critical is one's, personal brand or professional image, how important is it? And how does it affect, getting hired and retained on the job? And how is it that how does HR view all of that? I've always been very curious about how HR examines this with employees.
Well, as we all know, someone's image is, when you first walk in the door, that initial impression is absolutely critical. And it has a huge impact on an end result when you're talking about job offers. But, that's kind of, HR has maybe one perspective. But if we sort of go up to the 30,000-foot view level for a quick moment, And think about articles that are out there. For example, the Harvard Business Review, a very well-respected business publication, dedicates a significant amount of space to topics like reinventing your personal brand, managing talent, there's that word again, Parker, in the new world, bringing out the best in your people. So if you really think about the media in and of itself is very much in tune with how an image of individuals and collectively of organizations have a huge impact on a company's success and organizational success overall.
And in your examination of all this, where are companies at with respect to issues? I mean, are they really getting on the ball with it? Are they doing things to correct some of the problems? Where are companies with respect to this sort of information?
Well, it's an excellent question. And truthfully, when you drill down into companies and look at HR professionals, they are key to finding the best people. And in order to find the best people, they've got to know what competencies and skills to look for. So, you know, in terms of recruiting, for example, an HR professional has got to know what the image of the company, what image aligns with the strategy of an organization. So you take the company's mission, vision, values, and strategy, and from that you sort of pull through, all right, what is the knowledge, what are the skills, what are the abilities, and what is the image that an individual needs to have in order to work here? What's the combination of all of those?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm assuming that this is where we now get into the whole thing with the testing that's done a lot these days. You know, someone's going in for is interested in a particular position, and the next thing you know, you're getting an email that says, okay, you need to log on to this website and take this assessment.
That's right.
Part of the picture?
It is. In many cases, assessments are a part of the picture in order to join an organization. And the reason that companies invest in assessments is to really get, you know, everybody has their best foot forward when they go in for an interview. There are some innate values and behaviors that can be assessed, and companies are finding that this is helpful insight as they're making extending offers to potential employees, so as they're making those hiring decisions. And that's really why you tend to see more and more assessments.
Now, is this
Dan,
a trend that you feel that this is the frontier, so to speak, finding qualified candidates? Are we going to see more of this?
I do think so, and part of the reason, Dan, is because people are able to leverage technology so much easier today than they could have even 15 or 20 years ago. So, you know, people pop online, they take a quick assessment, the results are sent directly to the employer, and they have some additional information that they may not have had, several years ago.
Now, are they compiling... I'm very interested in this area. Are they now compiling statistics on the effectiveness of this way of hiring and these tests? How effective are they, and how accurate are they? Are they finding that this is a great way to do things, or is it still in a kind of a transitional sort of phase where they're kind of working things out and how to find out, you know, is this a good qualified candidate for us? Are these tests really effective, and have they measured that?
Well, you've heard the saying, this is not a destination, it's a journey. I think that's kind of where we are with assessments. The truth is many organizations absolutely believe in the assessments that they utilize, but in this changing business environment, an assessment that may have worked 5 years ago may not work in 5 years. So, for example, I was with an executive from a very large company just yesterday, and he was telling me that the positions that they are looking for today are really hybrid positions. They need a skill set of a driver, and they need a skill set of a logistics person, all in one. It's difficult to find that. Another person was telling me they need someone who has nursing skills, and they need someone who knows about the pharmaceutical industry, a nurse who knows about the pharmaceutical industry. So what we're starting to see is more and more hybrid positions. So if you think about the assessments as they relate to the positions, as positions continue to change and evolve, as well, you know, the assessments will need to do the same. So your question your question was, you know, kind of are we there yet? And the answer is probably not. But I don't know that we ever will be. I think this is a changing dynamic that we will need to be agile and move and groove as the business necessitates.
You know, Dan, talking about that, it's very interesting because just a few years ago, Virginia just talked about behaviors and values. They used to see a value being that was a top salesperson being very high social. So that was the matrix they measured it on. And what they're finding out now, they're really more highly individualistic and utilitarian. So even the metrics have changed, right, Virginia,
over the years? That's exactly right, Parker. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And they're shifting that right now. I've got a client in Texas that is really looking at their whole matrix system and how they measured it. And we just had a conference call Monday. And she said, what we did 5 years ago is not even valid anymore.
That's right.
You know? And so now they're really, you know, they're seeking for us to find out what are the new programs out there, what's legitimate. And there's a lot of assessments on the market, but a lot of them aren't very, very measurable. Some people just create an assessment, but it's not scientifically supported. Does that make sense, Virginia, on that?
Mm-hmm. It sure does.
And
it's, really
I think
does.
That some HR people...
Well, that is comforting to know that they are at least thinking about those things, and that, you know, they're flexible enough to say, hey, you know, maybe we need to analyze this a little bit more. Maybe a person who is good at sales also has this in their personality as well, and so maybe we need to adjust our tests for new understanding about personality.
Yes, absolutely. You know, Daniel, you asked a metrics question. Are they keeping statistics? I wouldn't say that all organizations keep statistics in terms of our assessments successful tools to utilize. But what I will say, of the organizations that I know of that leverage assessments, the ones that actually do utilize some metrics find that when someone goes through the assessment process, they tend to be with the organization longer than an individual who does not go through the process. So in other words, if they use that extra piece of data to say, you know, this person really is a good match here or they make sense here, that additional piece of data does help in terms of long-term probably satisfaction and engagement overall, because it's an additional piece of insight to the individual. So they can sort of decide, is this person a match for our company?
I see. And so by virtue of taking the test and doing and taking the test, what you're saying then is that there's a greater likelihood that that individual is going to be with the company longer?
Yes, and more engaged and more successful.
Okay.
That's why organizations continue to invest in assessments. It's not always the case, But if it's been a well-designed assessment process, you will see a difference on the back end in terms of what I call re-recruiting. Some people call it retention. I like to call it re-recruiting. Retention is keeping something away from where it wants to go. Re-recruiting is, yeah, you work hard to get these people in the door. What do you do every day to keep them coming back?
You know, Virginia, I was talking to you earlier. I think it's kind of interesting. The light bulb in my head just came on about this. It all comes down to the bottom line. It's all about, you know, getting the best out of your employees. It's all about making money for a company, organization, so that if the company's making money, I'm gonna stay employed, I'm going to make money. But what I'm really seeing now as I'm thinking through it, hearing you speaking, is that it's come in the training departments or the marketing departments, it's really coming down to us now about the bottom line. And that's not been the trend in the past 20 years. Just in the last, I'd say, 3 years, that's become more of a focused conversation around the training and development. I just had a meeting with a gentleman the other day. I'm working with his sales team, and he's like, look, I want to go from $700 million this year to $1 billion, and I think this training is going to impact that sales. And I thought, wow.
Yeah.
You know, that conversation was never done 3 years ago.
You are absolutely right. It's the return on investment, or ROI. You hear that constantly in these conversations. I'm going to make an investment, a financial investment, an investment of time in my people. What returns am I going to see from that?
Exactly. I can tell you right now, I felt a little stressed out.
Oh, Parker, with what you do. You know, with what you do, honestly, it makes such a huge impact on people's image and their self-confidence to go out and sort of, you know, tackle the world, take on the world, that I think it does have a tremendous impact. But it's all in the numbers. It really is all in the numbers. And, you know, one of the things that Daniel was asking about early on in terms of human resource professionals and such, and, you know, how does all this relate to human resource professionals, you were saying, Parker, that you met with a marketing gentleman who wants to take the sales from $700 million to $1 billion. HR people need to think of themselves as professionals, business professionals who practice in HR instead of HR people who practice in business.
Oh.
That's a good point. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. So what that means is really business professionals know how to read balance sheets. They know what the top line of the organization is. You know, what's that revenue look like? What are our gross margins? What's the profitability? They know what's going on in the respective industry. So, you know, from a product development standpoint, from people practices standpoint, if there are expansions, acquisitions that are going on in their industry, they know about these things. And that's what HR professionals need to do as well.
Interesting. So, in other words, I guess HR, which says that HR needs to be more engaged in the company as well.
You got
so
it.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right. Exactly right. And if an HR professional doesn't know how to do these things, doesn't know how to read a spreadsheet, doesn't get information about sort of the top line of the company or what the profitability is, then, you know, they can ask an accounting colleague, for example. Someone in the accounting department can share that kind of information typically. Or if they want to know how to read a balance sheet, an HR professional can take a class, jump online. In fact, on YouTube, you will find that they have a quick snippet about how to read a balance sheet, just right on YouTube. But asking for help that can actually help you become a well-rounded business professional is a strength. It is an absolute strength. It is not a weakness. So ask for that help. And, you know, it's imperative that an HR executive in particular understand the numbers, because typically the most expensive line item on a company's balance sheet is? What do you think it is?
The bottom line.
It's the people. The people are the most expensive line item on a balance sheet.
Oh, most expensive
in a
line
company.
Item. I got you. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it's the people. So the payroll and benefits costs are typically what you will see that, you know, they're the most expensive expense, and particularly in the service industry. And there are, you know, lots and lots of organizations in the service industry.
Okay, so we get why we need to know the numbers and how to learn to understand them, Virginia. Now, how do we, or how would you, how do I put this? How would you recommend someone learn more about what's going on in their industry?
Great question. So if you're an HR professional, sign up for press releases to be emailed to you for your own company, for your competition, and within the industry, if at all possible. Think about the power of knowing your biggest competitor has just rolled out a new product or service that may directly impact your business, your company. And let's say that they've developed a new product, for example, and they're now sort of hiring an enormous sales force to take the market by storm. That could have a huge impact on you as an organization. They may be coming after your people. And the managers need to know that. Your manager needs to know that. So, you know, if you find out these pieces of information, you want to immediately take the information or send the information to your boss and brainstorm, okay, if they start coming after our folks, what are we going to have done that will continue to attract our people? What other stakeholders in the organization need to know about this particular development in the industry? So kind of be on that cutting edge, particularly with your boss.
So you're bringing that information to your boss, you know, making him look smarter, I suppose, and starting getting that process going.
Exactly. And what does that do? That really enhances your personal brand. So being known as someone who's a leader, not a follower. So your boss will like it because when you bring new info to them, you know, it makes them look good. And your colleagues will like it because it makes them look good. People want to be smarter. So, and then if you go to your boss and suggest, you know, that key stakeholders get involved, so that they can help come up with ideas to sort of mitigate any situations, you actually can have a huge business impact. So you see sort of where
I'm
going with that?
Yeah, and absolutely. And then in the end, you know, you're going to, as just, you know, someone there, you're going to end up looking, you know, like a business professional, you know, not just an HR person, but someone who really understands what's going on.
You got it. And establishing credibility by understanding numbers and providing important information to the company will be a differentiator for you. And by the way, you know, developments in business almost always impact people. That's how it's relevant to HR.
So if common mistake number one is most human resource professionals, you know, think of themselves as an HR person in a, you know, in a particular business rather than a business professional who can practice in HR. What do you see as, you know, common mistake number two?
Well, common mistake number two is all about mind shift. And, you know, we're not taking a turn into psychiatry. I'm not an armchair psychiatrist, although I did practice in the psychiatric industry for a number of years. What I really mean by mind shift is that HR professionals have got to be thinking about solutions instead of always thinking that they've got to say no first when someone comes in to their office with a business issue. You know, in the old world, you would see, you know, human resources was kind of like the no police. And what we need to make sure that mind shift swings toward is more, how do we get to the right business solution?
And I'm, you know, most positive of this. I mean, are there certain laws, regulations that you have to be careful of?
Absolutely. I mean, some things are rules and some are laws, as you pointed out, and some are guidelines. And just remember to be focused on how to get to the right business answer. Now, you will never, ever want to compromise your integrity or that of your company. But be sure to keep an open mind and look at a number of options that can really help with solutions. That's why the business professionals come to you. They need help with a solution.
Well, that, you know, it makes perfect sense to me, and it seems like the operations people will be more likely to approach HR if they believe that HR is looking for solutions, not just saying no, you know, all the time. And okay, you know, tell us, Virginia, about the next common mistake.
Okay, so common mistake number three is that HR business professional or HR professionals don't take the time to show people how they link to the business strategy.
And what does that mean?
Well, it means that people need to understand exactly how they align with the overall company mission, the vision, the values, and the goals of the organization. And this is important because, you know, people want to ensure that their own personal brand fits the image of the organization, or they want to understand how their contributions align with the overall organization. So, for example, it's easy to explain to a salesperson how he or she aligns with the mission and vision and values and goals of the organization, because in most cases, they're the face of the company. But, you know, if you're talking about sort of a maintenance worker, for example, at Coca-Cola, you know, how do you align with the mission and vision?
Well, how do you see that a maintenance worker could be linked directly to the vision?
Well, I think that if you were to take the mission and vision and values and sort of, you know, read through them for Coca-Cola, for example, it's uh-huh. focused on their customers. It's all about customer satisfaction. And so if you think about a maintenance person who is working in the corporate headquarters, they are, in essence, supplying the work environment for the professionals who market the product, who make the product, who develop the product. And if those individuals don't have a great working environment, if they're too hot, if they're too cold, if the sprinkler systems are going off, if the electricity isn't working, how productive are they going to be?
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was just pausing there briefly for a moment.
Okay. So if you think also about the interactions that this individual could have with other people, you know, as they're walking through, it's the climate of the organization. It's the, you know, do you smile and say hello? Do you hold doors open for other people? When you get a maintenance call, are you quick to address the issues? Do you take them on immediately? Do you take ownership of them and make it happen yourself? Just like we expect people who deal directly with clients or customers, people who buy the Coca-Cola products, we would expect customer service to be delivered quickly to them. And if the maintenance person is doing the same thing in his or her job, then it creates that organizational climate. And it gets really back to what you were talking about earlier in terms of an employment brand. It's a great place to work because you're well-respected, and when there are issues, people handle them.
That's wonderful. And so, Virginia, what is another mistake? What's the fourth common mistake then?
Oh, good question. So the fourth common mistake is really sort of establishing and being aware of your personal brand in the workplace. The perception that others have of you will have a tremendous impact on your ability to grow and develop and be placed on projects.
Wonderful.
I'm sorry. So
Yeah,
I was going to say, you know, that's one component of it. But if you're someone who wants to grow in an organization, your image even has a huge impact on whether you get promoted. And that credibility and business savvy are absolutely key. So setting a roadmap for where you want to go in your career is absolutely critical, I would say.
Yes, and how does Virginia? How does a company or organization get a hold of you if they have more questions about these topics and how to improve their company image overall with respect to HR and how that can be implemented?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. If you all are familiar with LinkedIn, Virginia Means with VCG Consultants at LinkedIn. And then also, I believe, Daniel, attached to your website is some of my contact information, my email address. But then I'm happy to, you know, give additional information if you'd like, telephone numbers, et cetera. So my telephone number is... Okay, let me just say what my phone number is, and then we can, if you can provide that link, as I think you already have, then I think we're in good shape. But my telephone number is 770-863-3611, and I'm based in Atlanta, but I go everywhere.
Wonderful. I'm sure that we'll have a lot of listeners who will be I'm sure that this program has piqued a lot of interest in this topic, and we'd love to have you on the show again if that's a possibility.
Would love to do it.
Thank you so much, Virginia, for being on the program today.
My pleasure.
Bye, all.